Hey guys, welcome back to the Beck and Call podcast. I am your host, Merritt Beck. I am a fashion and lifestyle blogger. And on this podcast, I'm talking about all things life, work, and love as a single woman in my 30s. As y'all know, if you listened to last week's episode, I was coming off of having COVID last week. So Wednesday was my last day of isolation, which was actually the first day I felt back to 100% since I started experiencing symptoms on the 10th. And when I recorded last week, I was on the mend, but I was still experiencing some nasal congestion, which honestly, I kind of feel like I still have some nasal congestion. Just not sure if that's from COVID or if it's from allergies. I'm not sure. But in total, I probably had about 10 full days of symptoms, even though some were super minor, just like a tickle in my throat. But the worst of the symptoms were definitely on the 10th and 12th. So 2 to 3 days after I first started feeling symptoms. And I'm just glad to be done with it. So while it sucks I got sick, I just sort of figured I was bound to get it at some point. So I'm just glad to kind of have it out of the way, at least for now. I know I could probably get it again whenever the antibodies go away, but I'm vaxxed, I'm boosted. I had fun that night out, kind of knew I was going to get sick, and I got it. So we're now on the end of it, the tail end of it. I feel like I've totally maxed out on TV time. I was so ready to get back to the real world after being confined in my couch and bed for over 10 days. And I obviously don't have a ton of personal updates to share since I haven't been out of isolation that long, but I did have a couple of things to share from this weekend. So on Thursday night, I went to this newish place called The Village Dallas. It's right at Greenville and Carruth Haven. And I'd sort of compare it to The Domain in Austin. It's like an outdoor shopping and dining complex. It's got like a swanky boutique hotel, a golf club. They've got a food hall, several restaurants, a few shops. They've got a gym. I couldn't tell if it was like an Equinox or what, but it was a nice gym on the second floor of a building kind of overlooking some of the restaurants. It's just like a multi-use shopping complex, but it was cool, very modern. They had a lot of green space. I definitely want to go back and check it out and go to some of the other places in there. There was a Tex-Mex restaurant that one of the people recommended at Meridian, which is where we went. And Meridian is a chic restaurant with sort of a modern Brazilian menu. We just sat at the bar and ordered a few small apps, so I didn't get the full dining experience, but I want to go back at some point because I'm pretty sure the bartender mentioned that they won like best of Dallas in 2021, like they won one of the best restaurants or something. So not sure if that's true, but either way, it was a really cool spot and I want to check it out. But I just wanted to share that because I had never heard of this place. I'd never heard of The Village Dallas. I had to Google it. I originally, when I first looked it up on the map, thought it was right across from North Park, but it's actually on Greenville, right near 75, but not quite. I was picturing it behind the Container Store for some reason, and it is not there. So, but definitely check it out if you're in the area. And then on Friday night, I went to a local institution and one of my favorite spots for pizza, which is called Louie's on Henderson. If you've never been, it's sort of a divey vibe. And it's kind of funny because I think they treat their employees really well. Like they'll take a full week off for no reason. Like, I don't know if they do this every year, but 1 year we tried to go the weekend of 4th of July and they were just closed. They just like had taken the whole week off, which is like, great. Good for them. They just kind of make their own rules though. That's sort of what I wanted to get across. If you've never been, like I said, it's sort of a divey vibe, very casual, no frills. They've got great martinis, delicious pizza, and the most insane crab claws if you manage to get there early enough because they do sell out. Unfortunately, we didn't sit down to eat until around 8, so they were out. I was very bummed about that. So I'll have to go back soon for some of those because I quite literally dream about those. They are just so buttery and garlicky and delicious. And I've taken my mom and Morris there and they love it too. So great for all ages. It's just a feel good restaurant. But anyway, as much as it was a really fun night, I'm going to be real honest with you guys. I went way too hard on the alcohol that night. I had 3 martinis at Louie's, which I don't think I've ever done. Martinis are obviously kind of a challenge. It's basically like having a shot. It's a gimlet of vodka. And if I have a martini, I usually only have one. At the very max, I'll have 2. And if I have 2, I usually don't drink the rest of the night. but I was on a date and I had three because he had three. I don't know why I do this, but occasionally when I'm out, I like tend to go drink for drink with whoever I'm with, especially on a date, which is so stupid because men can drink more generally than I can. And anyway, like I said, I usually would only ever have one or at max two and then not drink the rest of the night. But because I was like going out with the guy, I drank three martinis at dinner and then we went out after that. And so I didn't stop drinking. And needless to say, I had not one, not two, but a 3-day hangover just from Friday night. Today is day three and I woke up with a headache. And I know I've talked about going out and being hungover on this podcast before, like in a jokey way, but I feel like I've done this one too many times lately. And it just like makes it like, I feel worthless. Like in addition to just feeling sick, I hate the idea of wasting a whole weekend being on the couch and not feeling well. And I'm not somebody who gets sick very often. I know I did just have COVID, but I truly don't get sick often. And so there's really no excuse for me feeling like this. Like I'm doing this to myself and I need to make some changes. That's basically what I'm saying. I rarely, if ever, drink at home or drink alone and almost never drink during the work week. As you know, I love having a routine. I love my daily workouts. And if I do drink that, I'm not as good at sticking with that routine because as I am now in my mid-30s, I just get bad hangovers. I mean, I've always gotten bad hangovers, but they've certainly gotten worse the older I've gotten. So I generally reserve drinking for the weekend. Lately, though, when I do go out, I've been drinking far too much. And when that happens, I almost always have a brutal hangover. Sometimes I can laugh it off. Like I know I've laughed it off on the podcast here before, but this weekend I felt like I wasted two full days of my life feeling like shit. And waking up with a headache again this morning was not fun. I mean, it's Monday and Mondays, I usually feel like, you know, I'm taking on the world. I get my workout in, I record the podcast. I feel like very productive usually on Mondays, but waking up with a headache, I didn't work out because I don't feel great still. And I feel like I'm just starting my week off on the wrong foot. It's just kind of a wake up call. And I think there are several reasons why this has happened lately. For one, I'm sort of dieting, so I'm eating less. I'm generally eating more healthy, whole foods. And if I haven't eaten a bunch before I start drinking, that definitely has a negative impact on how I feel the next day or how quickly I get drunk. And like I said earlier, the other thing is I'm like going on dates and I've realized that I often try to keep pace and match the energy of who I'm with. And when that's men, it's kind of a challenge since they almost always can drink more than I can. And I've got to stop trying to drink match pace with them. I like can't keep up and I just should not try. And I don't know why I do that when I drink, but I guess I do. And I had a ton of fun Friday and I don't regret that, but being hungover like that is just not worth it to me. And it makes me rethink how I want to approach my nights out going forward and approach dating and all of that stuff. Like I could do this so easily in my 20s and just like get with it the next day, but I just can't do that anymore. So I've got to like make some changes around here and I don't have anything happening really this week or weekend yet. So I think I'm going to take a bit of an alcohol break and see how I feel about it. I usually only drink once or twice a week, so I've never really considered being sober, but if I can avoid feeling like I did this weekend ever again, I might just consider it. Anyway, this is probably like a major overshare, but figured someone might understand where I'm coming from and get something out of it. I'll keep y'all updated on how I feel about it as I go along, but I definitely need to make some sort of change. I'm probably not going to be totally sober. I just, like I said, I don't drink that often, but just the past few times when I have, I've just like really overdone it. So I need to like tweak my approach, I guess. Anyway, back to my weekend recap. So even though I was super hungover on Saturday, I did manage to make it out to Heather McMahon's show in Dallas that night. So my friend Natalie and I grabbed an early dinner at Tango Room, which I'd never been to before. And it's so cool. So if y'all have been to the Design District, you may know where Sesetta was. That's where Carbone is going to be. And this, I think she said it's where FT33 was, but I never went to FT33. So I don't know if that's exactly where it was, but the location where Tango Room is in that same shopping center that Sesetta used to be. And it's like a really dark, loungy vibe. These really gorgeous red leather booths. The bar is so cool. The menu's definitely American. They had like lobster corn dogs, burgers, steaks. It looked like a fantastic menu. But unfortunately, because I didn't feel well, I didn't get to fully enjoy it. I was not hungry. I ordered a salad and picked at it barely. I just was not feeling great and my stomach was not in a good place. So I want to go back when I'm feeling my best because it looked like a great, great spot. And her burger looked fantastic. It looked so good. But after dinner, we Ubered over to the Majestic Theater. I was still feeling very touch and go at this point until I sat down in my seat. But when Heather came on stage and started her set, I will say I felt better. Watching something funny was a good distraction, and it definitely cheered me up. I had so much fun at the show. I think she's so talented, and I love how she kind of tailored parts of the show to Dallas specifically. That was sort of fun since I've lived here for a long time. A lot of the jokes made sense to me, so that was fun. But if you have a chance to go to one of Heather's shows, do it. She's fabulous. I know she's doing a big tour right now, the farewell tour. So check out Heather McMahon. I think it's Heather K. McMahon on Instagram. And then on Sunday, I was supposed to host Mahjong, but the plans fell through. And actually not because I was hungover, surprisingly, but I've got to say I was pretty relieved. I was just relieved to have a more relaxing day because Saturday I had a lot of anxiety about going to Heather McMahon because I felt bad. So luckily Sunday I didn't have anything and I just like watched The Vampire Diaries and cuddled with my dog. And was hoping that I'd feel better today, but here we are. It's Monday and I have a headache. So as I mentioned earlier, I kind of maxed out on TV during my isolation. So I haven't watched any movies, but I did start and finish one show since last week's episode. I watched the show Harlem on Amazon Prime and I absolutely love it. I'd compare it to Girls or Sex and the City, but with an entirely black cast. The show follows four girlfriends as they search for love, deal with work woes, and just their like general debauchery and fun stuff around the city. It's a really, really hysterical show. Like lots of laugh out loud moments for me, which you guys know I don't do very often with TV and movies, but I had laughed out loud a lot in this show. I would say, I want to give y'all a heads up, there's a lot of sex and nudity, at least in the first few episodes. I don't feel like it happened in every episode. But like I said, I would compare it to Girls and Sex and the City in that way. Lots of sex and nudity. And just like those two shows, it's sort of a quick watch. The episodes aren't very long and there are only 10 episodes in the first season. So it's a great show for like a quick weekend binge watch. I highly recommend it. And then another thing that I started since last week's episode was this burnout book. Everyone's been talking about it. I feel like I first saw T-Ball talking about it, Things I Bought and Liked. But I'm kind of struggling with it. So far, the perspective is mostly from moms or a teacher, like who does it all, the mom who does it all and like struggling with burnout as a mom, also running like their family life and kids' lives and all of that, which I can't really relate to as a single, like self-employed female. Sure, I've learned some things from it, but because it hasn't felt super relatable to me, I haven't enjoyed it as much as I thought I would, especially considering like Things I Bought and Liked shared it. And then Grace Atwood shared it. And I feel like I've just been seeing it everywhere. It's one of those books that's like making the rounds on all of the influencer and podcast accounts that I follow. I'll report back if I end up liking it more. I've got about 3.5 hours left of the audiobook, but so far I'm just kind of like, this doesn't really apply to me yet. I don't have kids. I'm not a teacher. I'm just like kind of managing my own life. And so I haven't found a ton of helpful stuff out of it for my particular situation. But anyway, I'll report back. All right. So this week's topic is sort of random, but it's something that I've always been super interested in. So I don't know about you guys. I am fascinated by human behavior, and maybe that's why I was so drawn to psychology as a major in college. I love discussing personality types, people's quirks, what makes them tick, how they think. Before even taking personality tests into account, there are definitely a few things I know very well about myself. So I love a plan, whether that's my morning routine or just knowing what social plans I have on my calendar for that week. I like to know what's coming. While I can be spontaneous, I would prefer to have some sort of plan or idea of what to expect out of my day and week. I just like to know. That's why I block things out in my calendar. I just like to know. Another thing, I hate being late. I'm very prompt. I'm generally around 15 minutes early everywhere I go. It just gives me anxiety to be running late. I'm that person who shows up far too early at the airport for a flight and just hangs out and works until it's time to board. I always dreaded the idea of being late to class in college. I didn't like it. Like if I was running late, I hate the attention that's on you, everyone looking at you when you're walking to class. I don't know. I just don't like that. I also don't love it when people are late to meet me. That sort of irritates me because I feel like it shows a lack of respect for your time. So it goes both ways. I don't love when people are late. I don't like being late, all of that. I'm also very honest and direct and to the point. I don't often beat around the bush. And often that can come off as blunt, or often that bluntness can come off as being rude, even if I don't mean it to be. Sometimes the honesty thing just doesn't pair well with my willingness to share. So like as an influencer and now a podcaster, I share a lot. And sometimes put my foot in my mouth by talking out of turn or talking about something that's bothering me or say something impulsively that I'll regret later. I've definitely more recently something happened where I talked about something on the podcast and it pissed somebody off. And, you know, that's a it's a mistake I made. It was an experience I had and I felt like I had a right to share it. But, you know, it ended up hurting somebody's feelings and I regret that. Obviously that wasn't my intention, but sometimes that happens, and that happens when I'm honest and sharing a lot, I guess. I would say I'm very outgoing. I can talk to a wall. I'll make friends with just about anybody, even if we don't have much in common. And I can always find something to talk to or someone. I can't even talk right now. I can always find something to talk about with anyone. And then finally, I am a major control freak. Sure, I love a plan, but this is also like a self-preservation thing. So like, I don't like being the passenger in a car. I'd prefer to drive. Even if other people think I'm a bad driver, I still think I'm a better driver than all of my friends, than like anyone I know, because I'm going to be more like, I'm never looking at my phone in the car. I don't know. I feel like I'm better. So I want to be in control. I also don't love flying. I'm not a daredevil or adrenaline junkie at all. Like I want to live. I have a fear of my mortality. I'm very aware of it. And so yeah, that probably bleeds into why I'm a major control freak. But so with all of that said, I think it's pretty clear I'm type A, and you can probably guess what some of my traits are that would be coming out of a personality test. But let's talk more about a couple of tests I've taken and what I've discovered about myself in the process. So first I wanted to talk about the Enneagram, and it's a weird word. If you've never heard of it, you're probably like, what is that? So what is the Enneagram? And I'm taking this definition from their website. So the Enneagram is a typology system that describes human personality as a number of interconnected personality types. The Enneagram itself consists of a 9-point diagram with each point representing a personality type. The Enneagram symbol is ancient and actually dates back to the writings of Pythagoras in ancient Greece. And this is all according to the Enneagram Institute. Like I said, I took this off their website, but the test itself is called the RISO or RISO Hudson Enneagram Type Indicator. So the READETI test, RHETI, and it can be taken online. I'll include a link in the show notes if you want to take it yourself. It's about $12. And I want to say it took me about 30 minutes to complete. They send you like a 49-page PDF with your results and a ton of really wonderful information about your own personality type, as well as how you work with others, including like what personality types are best for you in terms of relationships. It's just like a toolkit. They give you so much information. So I would say it's definitely worth the $12 test. I learned so much about myself, but I'll include a link in the show notes to the test if you want to take it. So the READETI test results show you your scores for each of the 9 Enneagram types, which are as follows. Type 1 is the reformer. Type 2 is the helper. Type 3 is the achiever. Type 4 is the individualist. Type 5 is the investigator. Type 6 is the loyalist. Type 7 is the enthusiast. Type 8 is the challenger. And type 9 is the peacemaker. And I'm not going to describe what each individual type is because that would take forever. There are a ton of resources on the internet about the Enneagram, including a few Instagram accounts that I love to follow that they do memes and certain things based on personality types and stuff. So Just Google Enneagram personality types if you want to read about each individual type before taking the test, if you're just curious or just want to know more. But after taking the test, like I said, you get a ton of information. It takes like 30 minutes to complete. I feel like there were like 140 questions or something. My highest score was for type 3, the achiever. And my second highest score was actually a tie between four different types: type 8, type 2, type 1, and type 7. And like I said in the beginning of talking about this, all of these are interconnected. So you can have a little bit of several of them. Obviously, there's probably a dominant one. There's usually one that you score highest for. And then you may have like a, you might be a three wing two. Like you might have scored really high in the two after the three or whatever it is. But I am a type 3, but then I have elements of type 8, type 2, type 1, and type 7. So anyway, generally, threes are effective, competent, adaptable, goal-oriented, organized, diplomatic, charming, into performance, and image conscious. Threes get into conflicts by being expedient, excessively driven, competitive, so on point, self-promoting, appropriate instead of sincere, boastful, and grandiose. At their best, threes are inner-directed, authentic, modest, admirable, well-adjusted, gracious, interested in others, and self-accepting. As I mentioned before, the Ready Results PDF goes into way more detail. So for example, there's a section called Relationship Issues where it lists problems that may occur in my relationships due to my type 3 personality and characteristics. So including holding the partner to strict standards that the partner does not wholeheartedly share, workaholism as a way of avoiding intimacy, not speaking up when they need help or support, and then resenting the partner for not supporting them, and then haranguing a partner for not reflecting on them well or behaving in ways that do not support three's self-image. The Enneagram also shares information on type compatibility. Wow, I can't talk. Meaning which personality types would be ideal for a relationship with a type 3. Another section I really enjoyed reading was the personal growth recommendations for type 3s, which actually offers helpful advice and tools for managing the negative sides of my personality type. And in addition to sharing in-depth information on your strongest personality type, the results also share more information on your other two highest scoring personality types. So for me, because there were four, I actually had four additional breakdowns in my PDF. So maybe that's why my PDF was 49 pages long. They may not all be 49 pages long, but I got a ton of great info on the challenger, the helper, the reformer, and the enthusiast, in addition to the achiever. While type 3 is certainly my highest score, there are elements of the other personality types I also have. So it's interesting to read about those too. And you can read more about each of the 9 individual Enneagram personality types online, but I highly recommend taking the test because it was really eye-opening and framed a lot of my weird quirks and characteristics in a way that made total sense to me. I think it just helps to like understand why you think the way you think and where that comes from. I'm sure you could try to guess what you might be, but there's definitely some overlap between personality types. So like I tried to guess my mom's after taking this and reading about all of these, but I think she could be between 3 or 4 of them. There are aspects of several that sounded familiar that could be her, but without taking the test, we won't know for sure. So that's the Enneagram. Another personality test is the Myers-Briggs Personality Type Indicator. And this is a self-report inventory designed to identify a person's personality type, strengths, and preferences. This questionnaire was developed by Isabel Myers and her mother, Catherine Briggs, based on their work with Carl Jung's theory of personality types. While the Enneagram consists of 9 personality types, the Myers-Briggs test can result in 16 possible personality types. And a lot of people take this test early on in their careers to see what kind of employee they'll be in certain jobs. I don't think I'd ever taken this test before this week. I took it last week so I could talk about it on this episode. I worked at a corporate job for like 2 years and then I worked at startups. So I didn't really ever have to take this test for a job. But I've always wanted to find out what I was. So last Tuesday, I went online to myersbriggs.org and took the test. It's $50, which seems quite hefty compared to the Enneagram test, especially considering I found the Enneagram results to be much more comprehensive and helpful. I'll include a link to the Myers-Briggs test in the show notes if you want to take it for yourself, but this test took me more like 10 to 15 minutes to complete, and I didn't find it as easy to take. Like it was very repetitive. And I don't know, I felt like I was being tricked as I was answering questions. There's like a pick two words that more accurately describe you. And they are like, sometimes they're contradicting words, but sometimes they're like super similar words. And I felt like the same question was being asked too many times. Anyway, take it and let me know what you think about it. But the Myers-Briggs test results indicate your preference for each of four pairs: extroversion or introversion, E or I, sensing or intuition, S or I, thinking or feeling, T or F, judging or perceiving, J or P. So your results will come in some combination of those letters. So for mine, I was an ESTJ, which stands for extroversion, sensing, thinking, and judging. And here's a little description about what those are. ESTJs are natural administrators. They move quickly to implement decisions, organize projects, people to achieve their goals, and are forceful in implementing their plans. They focus on results and the bottom line. They have a clear set of logical standards they systematically follow and want others to follow also. They value home, health, family, financial security, and achievement. ESTJs can be quite gregarious and generally enjoy interacting with people, especially around tasks, games, traditions, and family activities. That is so me. I love games. I was just telling someone I wanted to go bowling. They take relationship roles very seriously and fulfill them responsibly. Their communication is clear and straightforward, and people seldom have to wonder where they stand. And potential blind spots for my personality type: if ESTJs have not developed their thinking preference, they may not have a reliable way of evaluating information and thus may end up making overly harsh decisions. And if they have not developed their sensing preference, ESTJs may decide too quickly before taking in enough information. Both of those things sound like me. I told y'all I'm impulsive when I'm mad. I sometimes stick my own foot in my mouth and say something that I end up regretting later, even though I feel totally valid saying it. And, you know, it's my experience too. Sometimes I get myself in trouble by, you know, being too open about something on the podcast and it hurts somebody's feelings instead of talking to them about it. So that is definitely something I've come across in my own personality. The descriptors for my Myers-Briggs personality type include analytical, critical, logical, objective, matter of fact, practical, realistic, pragmatic, decisive, organized, systematic, assertive, self-confident, outspoken, tough, clear, efficient, straightforward, dependable, and conscientious. So I know that the Myers-Briggs test is sort of the standard personality test, especially in corporate America, but I definitely prefer the Enneagram, and I find the results were way more comprehensive, insightful, and helpful. Sure, it's nice to know what your personality type is, but is that really enough? Like, I feel like the PDF, the results that I got from the Myers-Briggs test, it was informative in that it tells you what you are, but it doesn't give you any information on what to do with it. So I just felt like the additional information the Enneagram results gives you help you better manage your interpersonal relationships. And that's the real gem. The PDF gives you a bunch of great intel on what parts of your personality may have a negative impact on various aspects of your life, your relationships, your work, etc. And it suggests ways to counteract or at least manage those qualities. So in addition to the results, I feel like it's a toolkit, whereas the Myers-Briggs test is just the result, which is sort of ironic that I'm saying that I prefer the Enneagram results, because all of these tests have told me I prefer the straightforward factual information, but I also like information that I can use to help myself. I like to be armed with information. I love to do research. I want to know, that's why I like therapy. I want to know all the best ways I can achieve things and work with people and better manage my friendships and relationships and all of that stuff. So that's why I really like the Enneagram results. And you got to take the Real Ready test. I will include the link in my show notes, but you've got to take that test. There are a ton of different tests you can take for free online. But the actual Ready test that you pay for that's where you're going to get this boatload of information in the PDF. This is what you want to take. And if you've taken either of these tests, I want to hear from you guys. Call into the hotline, 214-620-0473. I want to know if you feel like your results were accurate. Like, did it affirm things that you already thought about yourself, or was it a surprise to you what your personality type was? how has learning about your personality type helped you, or has it hurt you in your personal life? Like, I always find this stuff really interesting. And I always find it funny that corporations require employees to take these tests and wonder how they actually use them to staff people in certain positions. Like, do they actually do that? Or is it just to see what you'll be like? I don't know anything about corporate America in that sense. So if you have if you've been given a personality test like this for a job, call in and tell me about it. I want to hear about it. So tell me if they like kind of segmented you into a particular job because of it, or if it formatted how your boss brought information to you, or if they structured your performance reviews differently because of it. I want to hear about it. Tell me about it. So I'm assuming it works in their benefit, but you never know when companies incorporate stuff like this. So I do think the more you know about yourself, how you process information, knowing what's important to you, all of those things play a part in how you manage every aspect of your life. I'm not sure this was interesting at all to any of you, but maybe you learned something new or different about me in the process. And I don't know, I think it just opens up interesting conversations about each of our individual personality quirks and characteristics and how we work and deal with people and manage our relationships and all of that stuff. I just think it's fun to talk about. All right, guys, we've reached the beck and call segment of the show. As a reminder, you can call in and ask me anything, whether you need advice or just want to tell a story or send in a comment or whatever. You can call the hotline at 214-620-0473, and I will answer your question in a future episode. Let's get into the first voicemail.
Hi, Merritt. This is Shannon. On your last podcast, I think it was your last one, you discussed your kind of journey with ADHD and medications and that sort of thing. And I think you had mentioned that you were diagnosed when you were in elementary school. And we are in the process of getting my almost eight-year-old daughter evaluated for ADHD. And I was just curious as to what signs and symptoms maybe your mom saw that made her pursue that diagnosis. Did you guys try any like therapies before doing the medication? Do you feel like the medication helped? I just love to hear like your story with that. And it's just helpful to hear people's experiences when we're going through this with our daughter. And so I was just curious. Thanks for being so open and transparent and sharing your heart with us. I enjoy listening to your podcast every week. Have a great day.
Sure thing. I'm happy to talk about my experience. So I really think it came down to the teachers at my school. So I was lucky in that I was in a very small private school, first through eighth grade. And I want to say pretty early on, maybe second grade, the teachers would notice that I wouldn't be paying attention. So like I would get so easily distracted in class. Like if a girl or two girls next to me started talking to each other, like mentioned something, would totally derail my focus. Or I got easily distracted by literally everything. And it became a problem so much that they had to like reach out to my parents about it and be like, we think you should maybe get her tested for like a learning disability, like ADHD or whatever. And so I think that was really the problem. But I had this struggle with anything staying on task. So doing homework, reading, doing math, like any kind of activity where it required me to like sit down and focus on something, I could not do. It was a constant struggle anytime I was home, anytime there was like quiet time at school, where you're trying to be working on something. I had a really hard time staying focused on any task. And so I think that paired with paying attention during class, that was noticeable and obvious to the teachers as they were teaching because the class was so small. And so they noticed when I would get off track or stop paying attention or get distracted easily or whatever. And so they were able to communicate with my parents that that was an issue in class. And I know my parents saw this when I was home doing homework and stuff. So I think it was probably a combination of those things. Now, I was so young, so I don't recall us trying to do anything before getting tested. I think I got tested And they identified that the hearing thing was a big problem for me. I think I mentioned this earlier on about the ADHD when I've talked about it. One of my biggest issues is audio. So if I'm on the phone or if I'm talking to somebody and someone is close enough to me to where their conversation is loud or overpowering, I cannot listen to who I'm talking to. I will totally like disengage and listen to what's happening next to me. So like when I was working in an office, I would have to take all of my calls in a private room. I couldn't just sit. It was an open concept office, and that was a really big problem for me. So in a classroom, this happened a lot when, you know, they're young kids and they're like playing or talking to each other, like whispering to each other when the teacher is talking. You know, that happens. Even in the best schools, that happens. Well, that would constantly derail me. I wouldn't listen, wouldn't pay attention, wouldn't absorb anything from that class. And it was a constant issue. So that was my biggest problem, I think. And medicine absolutely helped. I think each medicine is different. So I'm not going to make a recommendation there. I'm obviously not a doctor. But getting tested, and once you do, you have to like see a psychiatrist, and they're the ones who kind of figure out what medications to be on. I started with Ritalin and I was on that for a few years. And then in middle school, I was on Adderall, and that had some bad effects for me in terms of like, I didn't eat anything. I was in a bad mood all the time. That could have also been just middle school. I hated middle school because I was bullied, but I did Concerta. I was on Concerta for a really long time, and that definitely helped. I think it really helped me focus. It kind of helped me tune out what was going on around me. And I was just, it was easier for me to focus on a task. I don't know how to describe it. It wasn't like I was on speed or anything. It was like, I think I functioned like a normal person when I was on the medicine. And now I don't need it. I feel like I've grown out of it. I will say, I think part of that is because my job is something that I really love and I'm interested in and fascinated by, and I love doing what I do, that it's easy for me to focus on it. It was the tasks that I really didn't like. So math, for example, I always struggled with, and I just hated it because it was a challenge for me and I'd get easily distracted because I wasn't interested in it anyway. I loved to read, but even still, I would get distracted because of the audio thing. But I definitely think get your child tested and just kind of see what they say about it. I think every kid is different. Your kid may have some other things that I didn't, or I may have had some things that she doesn't. So listen to the professionals, I think, is my best advice. But, and it may take, if you do end up getting your kid on medication, it may take a couple of tweaks. It may take a couple of tweaks with the amount. They may change the milligram amount. It may be better, like they do time release capsules, that may be better. So it's better, like longer throughout the day. There are just a lot of variables here that I can't really give advice for, but I'm glad they tested me early. I don't think I would have done as well in school had I not had that opportunity, because I definitely struggled without the medicine. So I definitely think it helped. I think if your child is struggling in that way, definitely get tested and find out where you can help make improvements and go with it. All right, let's get into the next voicemail.
Hi, Merritt. Hope you're doing well. So appreciate your podcast and really love the wide range of topics, and also so appreciate your vulnerability and honesty as you discuss them. My question is on one of your more vulnerable topics, egg freezing, as I'm getting ready to start the process myself. Your podcast was really the thing that set me over the edge to feeling like I was ready to do it. So really, thank you for sharing your experience. I'm curious if there are anything you would do differently or any tips that you've since learned since going through your egg retrieval, and also curious to know how long after the retrieval it felt like you got back to normal, and if you experienced any bloating or cramping afterwards and how long that lasted. Thank you.
Thanks. I'm so glad to hear that you enjoyed the egg freezing episode, and hopefully it was helpful for you, and I wish you luck in this process. It's definitely a trying process. There's a lot of things involved and emotions running high and all of that. But I wish you luck with it. So anything I would do differently, I think I wish I would have started the process a little earlier. like, I kind of wish that I'd done it earlier on in the pandemic, because we had all this time, you know, that I wasn't going out and doing stuff. And before all the traveling was happening, I wish I would have done it earlier, because now things are picking up. I'm like dating again. I'm out and about. Like, I don't want to do it again. Like, I've done it, and I know I probably should do it again, but I've kind of come to the decision that I'm not going to do it right now. So if I do it again, it's going to be a while, which is stupid, because, you know, the longer you wait, the longer you wait, the worse off you probably are. But I have 9 eggs in there, so hopefully that'll be enough. But anyway, so I wish I would have started the process earlier. I think I mentioned this in the egg freezing episode, that the actual start of the process took a lot longer because of the scheduling. And so I wish I'd known that, because you're sort of planning out a month in advance. Like, you tell them the start of your period, and then you start like the pre stuff. And then it's not until the next period where you're actually doing the things and really injecting yourself with stuff. So it's like you kind of have like a 2 month lead time, which I didn't really understand. They give you a lot of information, but I wouldn't say it's totally clear. I think they just sort of expect people to do a lot of research too. I loved my doctor and everything, but I just think it's like a factory. They just like churn people out. There's constantly, it's like an assembly line. I think I mentioned that too. And so you kind of have to do your own research. And I guess I just wasn't totally aware of that 2 month lead time thing. And I was traveling a little bit this summer, and so that sort of negatively impacted when I started this whole process. And I'm glad I did it when I did, but I do wish I'd started it earlier on in the pandemic, because then I might have been more willing to do it more than once. Now that like things are opened back up and people are going out again and doing that, I don't want to be home. I don't want to be injecting myself every night. That's not fun when you're dating, like when you're trying to see new people. And so that's something I wish I'd known and done differently. I think everything else, I kind of followed the rule book. I think I did it all by the book, and I think it turned out as well as it could have. So I don't regret anything about it. As far as the cramping and bloating, I definitely felt cramping within the few days of the egg retrieval, the day of the egg retrieval, and then maybe 2 days after that I had cramping. And I mostly felt bloated the week of the egg retrieval, because that's when your ovaries are as big as they're going to get. And I was probably bloated the next week, but I felt like that was mostly just because I hadn't been working out. And, you know, it's kind of a surgery, or having a surgery. So it's probably your body just reacting to that. But no, I felt pretty, once I was able to start working out again, which was like 2 weeks post egg retrieval, that's when I started feeling like myself, because working out is a big part of my routine. By not working out, it felt like I didn't feel like myself. So that is where I would probably say that I saw the change in getting back to my day-to-day routine. That's where I start feeling like myself again. And now I really feel like myself several months out, because I feel like, I think I've said this already, but I'm making progress. I'm like really back in my routine and feeling good about it. And I was just sort of in a rut for a while, and I hated not being able to work out for a month. I really hated that. So that, I think, is just important to note. If you do like to work out like I do, or like to have a routine, just expect to not feel like yourself that entire month. Obviously, hormones are a thing. The drugs are a thing. Your schedule is not really your own that whole month. Other than that, though, it really wasn't that terrible. It wasn't that hard. I think you'll totally get through it with flying colors. I think you'll be fine. I think just setting that expectation for yourself that your schedule is not your own. You're not going to have, like, your nights are not going to be free like they were, because you have to do injections every night at the same time. Just like setting those expectations early that it's just going to be like you're kind of giving away a month of your life during the egg retrieval process. So I wish you luck. I hope it goes well for you, and that you don't have too much cramping and bloating, and you get a lot of eggs and all of that stuff. But if you have any more questions, feel free to call back in at 214-620-0473. Thank you guys again for calling in. I love hearing your voicemails. You can obviously also submit via email to info@beckandcallpodcast.com, but I love the voicemails, so definitely continue to do that. And that is it for this week's episode. Thank you guys for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed chatting about the personality tests and types today. In the meantime, please be sure to rate, review, subscribe, and share. And be sure to follow along on Instagram at Beck and Call Podcast. And I will catch you guys next week. Bye.